Okay, anyway, I feel bad that we missed a few times. First of all, we missed Rav Dovid's yard sign. Right, when was Rav Dovid's yard sign? Yeah, it's I think Tes Vav Kislev, right? So that was in Tavshin 1941. So that will be Tavshin Aleph. So now we're, so that's how many years ago? What? Tavshin Bay. Okay, but in 81, we'll go with the English. So it's in 41, December 41. 89 years. And now we're...
89 years.
22. What? No. Now we're 2.
81 years ago?
So it has to be a 1. You have to get a 1 there somehow.
81 years?
81 years ago.
Yeah. 81? Oh, okay. I thought you said... Okay, so that's a long time. 81 years. Okay. And we also miss a different yard sign. We miss the Alter Nevarotics yard sign. Right? Anyone who reads any Nevarotics volume knows when the Alter Nevarotics yard sign? We see no Nevarotics here. The Alter Nevarotics yard sign was Yud Zion Kislev. Tough Reish Pei. So that's 103 years ago? Right, now we're in Tav Pei Gimel, right? Tav Shin Pei Gimel. And this is in Tav Reish Pei. So 103 years ago. Right? But Yud Zayin Kislev. Right? And all the Nevarotic Svarim, they always had their Asifa. For if you read any Nevarotic Sefer, you always have Yud Zayin Kislev. Yud Zayin Kislev is a big date. So we miss Yud Zayin Kislev. So what can we do? Anyway, so Rav Dovid's yard sign. We talked about Rav Dovid all year. We talked about Rav Dovid. So I wanted to talk, and I don't even want to talk about Alter Nevarotic either, but that may be for a different time. But I wanted one line from the Alter Nevarotic, which ties into Chanukah. So we're tying in the Alter Nevarotic and Chanukah, and I don't know how we get Rav Dovid in here somehow. Okay. There's a sefer, which guys should know, called Tenuas HaMusar. It's a very wonderful sefer, written by a person named Rav Dov Katz. Rav Dov Katz was a Talmud of the Alter. The Alter was Nifter in 1927. He was a Talmud of the Alter. He was involved in writing the Ort Zofen, and he wrote a five-volume set called the Tenuas HaMusar, which is considered in the world, you know, I don't want to say it's the most authoritative because Shiva did argue at some things, but it's in the world, you know, he was a Chashra Baal Musar himself, as we see, was a Tal of the Alter, and he wrote the Ort Zofen, and he spent this was his life mission to write, a good part of his life's mission, to write a history of the Musar movement. That's what Tenuas means, the movement. Tenuas HaMusar. So the first volume is about Rav Zundel and Rav Yisrael. Second volume is about Rav Simcha Zisso and his Talmidim. The entire third volume is about the Alter Sabaka. Fourth volume is in Chavetz Chaim and the Alter Nevarotic. And the fifth volume is about the more recent Baal Musar, Rav Chasman, Rav Leib Bloch, you know, the recent from right before the war. Okay, anyway. And then he has a sixth volume, which is called what? Pomus HaMusar, which is not in print. Right, the sixth volume is not in print, and because they say that he wrote it, but he decided never to reprint it. He wrote it just for it should be in print, but he didn't want it to reprint. It's about to explain the machlokes, and of course, everyone in the yeshiva in Queens, because you can get it on HebrewBooks.org, so a lot of people got copies of it, including I think I have one in my office. But okay, anyway, so that is the Pomus HaMusar. Anyway. So in the sixth, sounds good. Okay. So in this volume here on Rav Yosef Zundel, he has Amoras. The Alter Nevarotic had a lot of sharp phrases, which we learned together in Musar, right? So here's a phrase which I wanted to stop at. The famous thing is known from the Alter Nevarotic. Lost the page. Here it is. Me oidam lo chashavti b'dover im yocho ani lasoisum lav. I never stopped to think Is it doable or not doable? Ella, im tzarech ani la'asay sam la'ad. Are you supposed to do it or not? Right? In other words, most people, when they decide what to do, they decide, can I do it? Is it possible to do? I'm only going to do something I can do. So the question is this doable? He says, no, that's not the question. The question is it the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? If it's the right thing to do, you do it, whether it's doable or not. The wrong thing to do, you don't do it. This is I've heard this piskan many times. It's not whether you can, it's whether you should. Right. Shiva used to say this piskan also, by the way. But it comes here, it comes originally, apparently the source is from the Altar in Nevada. Now, what does that mean? If you can't do something, why should you do it? You know, it makes a lot of sense. If you want to decide if you should do something, you should think, is it doable? No, don't think about whether it's doable. Just decide if it's the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. If you're supposed to do it, then you do it, even if you can't do it. Right? That doesn't sound any logical sense. Right? So the basic, the word is, it's a very, very big insight, is that you're not supposed to say, many people say, I can't. I can't, 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 I can't. Right? Some people, that's all they say. You ask them to do something, I can't. So I can't is a terrible thing, and it's usually not true. Why is I can't not true? So I have four reasons, but let's see, what does someone tell me? When a person says I can't, why is that very often not true?
Because we limit ourselves so much.
Okay. Why not?
You didn't actually think about it? You didn't actually think about it?
Okay.
We don't want to.
So there's a lot of reasons. So the first reason is, like I already heard a few good reasons. So the one with the famous Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is Shmuz on Yaakov. That Yaakov comes to the bear and he asks him, how come all the Rayim are standing around? They don't water their sheep. And they said, we can't. Why can't we? Because there's a rock on the well. We can't pick up the rock. Right? And what happens? Rachel comes and Yaakov sees Rachel and he picks up the rock. So Rashi seems to say that Pshat is that Yaakov was strong. Okay, that seems to be the push of Pshat. But at least Rav Chaim Shmulevitz learned Pshat. I'm not questioning whether he's Mukhluk or not Mukhluk. That Yaakov was no stronger than the Rayim. The Rayim were outdoor people. Yaakov was an Ishtam Yaoshev Olim. He wasn't working out. Pashup Shad, he was not in such great shape. And he wasn't any stronger than the Rayim. Except he was more motivated. Right? The famous story about this little old lady who basically, you know, that when she gets to Publix and she finishes her shopping and she tells them they can't push her wagon to her own car, it's too hard, and she needs a guy to push her wagon, right? You know, you're getting lying behind that lady, you know. And that very same old lady, if Chas v'Shalom, she drives over her granddaughter, grandson, what does she do? She picks up the car, right? You can't pick up, right? And there's stories like this all over. They say that the Klosenberg Rebbe said about himself that before the war, he was a Rosh Hashiva, and he couldn't carry the Sfarim to Shir, and he used to have to tell Midim how to carry his Sfarim to Shir, his Gemara, whatever, and came the war, and the Germans put him to hard labor, and he had to carry sacks of like 100 pounds of cement, and he carried it. I can't. When there's a gun to your head, you can't. Right? They say, I heard from Rav Zuckerman that the Salbaka Yeshiva, the Russians, they had a building. They built a new building, and then the Russians came into Kovna, and they confiscated the building, and they turned it into a social hall, like a game room, for communists were into, for the public, so public usage game room. So the Mashgiach of Salbaka said, we thought that we were learning to our utmost. We were pushing ourselves to the limit. He says, Hashem told us that it was a game room. We were playing games in yeshiva. We could have pushed ourselves much harder. He said, and the biggest raya is because came along the Russians and they put us to hard labor. And we see we could work much harder. So what we know, so there's one thing is that when you're more motivated, you can do something that you can't do. If you're really more motivated, you could do it. Okay. So that's not really saying you really can't. By the way you are now, that you're not motivated, you really can't do it. But if you get yourself more motivated, you would, the motivation would give you extra strength. Okay. The second svara, someone said this too. There's a famous story, which I say many, many times. I heard this from the yeshiva. It's apparently the true story. And then I heard the exact same story on tape from Roberto Wine. He said it happened in Chicago. So apparently the same story happened two places. What can I do? The yeshiva said there was a guy in the yeshiva that never came to Minyan. The yeshiva in Queens, I don't know if you know, the yeshiva is very mocked in a Minyan. He was very mad. He used to take attendance. He used to check, especially what used to be the yeshiva, was a small yeshiva. So he went, apparently he called the fellow in, and he told the guy, listen, you know, forget about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay, I know there's an Indian that comes to Minyan. Apparently that's, that's not enough to inspire you to come. But listen, you know that every day I look around the yeshiva and I see you're not at Minyan. And I invested so much energy in this yeshiva my whole life. And when I see that you're not at Minyan, it hurts me personally because I begin to feel that, ayvei, the yeshiva is crumbling. Because if one guy doesn't come to Minyan, then other guys aren't going to come. And I feel my life work is crumbling. And it causes me personal agmas nefesh. So I'm asking you a personal favor. Forget about the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Forget the mitzvah minyan. Please don't cause me aggravation. Please do me a favor. Save me a daily aggravation and come to minyan. Sounds good. So the guy told Rashiva, says, Rebbe, you think I don't want to come to minyan? I'm dying to come to minyan. I know I have to supposed to come to minyan. But you see, I'm a night person. And by my biological clock, I can't fall asleep before 3 o'clock. And no matter what I do, it's impossible. I just can't fall asleep till 3 o'clock. So 12 o'clock is the middle, midnight is the middle of the day for me. And at 7 o'clock in the morning, for me, is like 3 o'clock for other people. And my body just don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's human, no matter how many alarms, whatever I do, I try so many different things. It's humanly impossible for me to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. My clock don't work that way. My biological clock doesn't work. So I love to do a yeshiva fair, but I can't. Okay. So yeshiva said, look, we're supposed to argue with the guy. He says he can't. So he said, but a little later, the guy got married. And what do you think happened? He gets married. And the first week in marriage, and his wife wakes him up at 7 o'clock and says, Chaim, don't you want to go to Minyan? And what happens? He jumps out of bed. And after that, every day he's at Minyan. What happened to his biological clock? So she was saying, that meant the fun. There was no such biological clock. It was all a figment of his imagination. Right? Which means that people... Einus is very convenient excuse. When a person says, I'm an Einus, it's a great excuse. I don't have to do it. I'm an Einus. But very often, we imagine the Einus. We convince ourselves it's an Einus. Right? Someone said that we're lazy. So, but I don't want to admit that I'm lazy or I'm this or I'm that. So I got the greatest excuse. I'm an Einus. He tells what Brooke tells us similar. It's not exactly the same idea, but it's very similar. He said that in Israel, when the British mandate, so the Jews had no weapons because the British didn't allow the Jews to have weapons. And the Arabs had weapons because, first of all, the British liked the Arabs, and second of all, the Arabs anyway always have weapons because that's what they love weapons, you know, that's the type of people they are. And besides which, there was Jordan and Egypt was a free country. They were countries, so they already had trained armies. So So when the British agreed to leave Israel, so everybody expected a bloodbath because the Jordanian army was a trained army, which was at the Arab League, was a real, supposed to be a Chashiva army with weapons and training. And Egypt had an army with an air force even and training. And the Arabs had weapons. And Stamazak had weapons. And the Jews had no weapons. So it's going to be terrible. So they had these secret weapon factories, because the Jews, the only thing they had brains. So they figured out how to manufacture weapons. So they had secret underground weapons factories all over the country where they were manufacturing weapons. You know, against the British wouldn't know, they would confiscate. There was one in Yerushalayim. They made it, it's called the Davidka. Anyone who knows been in Yerushalayim, there's a Davidka Square somewhere. But okay, but that's besides. So they were manufacturing weapons. So he says that it came a few months before the British were supposed to leave. And the person in charge of the weapons factory calls all the workers and says, I know some of you people are Shomer Shabbos, but, you know, everybody knows Pikuach Nefesh is Daicha Shabbos. So, you know, if we don't have weapons, it's Pikuach Nefesh, so we got to work on Shabbos. So everyone agreed, except for one little Jew. He said, I want to ask my rabbi first. So he goes and he asks his rabbi, and he says, listen, the guy says we have to work on Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh. He said, are we allowed to work on Shabbos? He says, of course not. He says, but what about Pikuach Nefesh? He says, Pikuach Nefesh, my foot. What time do you start working? How big of a lunch break do you take? In Israel, they take a two-hour lunch break, for I think it was a nose, right? You know, so cut off, stop, don't take your lunch break. Start working a half hour earlier. Work an extra half an hour later, and you won't have to work on Shabbos. He says, so, you know, it was like pashut. To the Rav, it was pashut, not an Ines. It's a simple solution. But to everybody else, yeah, we're an Ines. We got to work on Shabbos. So Ines is a very, he says the same point, that people, when you don't care that much, so you're quick to say, you know, this rabbi realized in 30 seconds that it's not an Ines. But everybody else was convinced it's an Ines, because when you don't care, so Ines is a great way of excusing it. Okay, it's an Ines, grind. So Ines is very dangerous. When people say, I can't, very, very often, it's really, we're just fooling ourselves. We're just taking the easy way out. Now, obviously, I don't mean it's never such thing as you can't. The guy just says, I'm not going to go to sleep and I'm going to stay up all night, you know. Obviously, you can't do that, you know. He's like, oh, well, I'm not going to tell myself I need sleep. I'm not saying that you never, there's no such thing that you can't. I can't learn, I got to go to sleep. But very often, people excuse themselves when I can't, and it's not true. It's just a convenient excuse. Okay, that's reason number two. The first one is that if you were more motivated, you could, because your motivation gives you added adrenaline. But right now, really, you can't. Right now, Yaakov, without his motivation, he really can't pick up this rack. It's really too heavy. But if the adrenaline that would be given by the motivation would give him the energy to pick up the rack. The second one, the other one is that really, it's a figment of his imagination. He really could pick up the rack. The rack is made out of paper mache. The rack weighs nothing. It's just a convenient excuse that because he's too lazy to try, so he convinced himself he can't pick up the rack. Right? Very, very different. The second one is much more common than the first. The first one, you have to go ahead and raise your motivation. It's not so easy. You got to get yourself more motivated. If I don't get myself more motivated, you really can't. But the second one means it really could, even right now, Bashir Husham. It's all a figment of your imagination. The guy says, I can't get up from Minyan. It just was a total baloney. No shaykhis.
The guy in yeshiva who couldn't wake up, he started waking up when he had more motivation.
And it wasn't because it was more, okay, okay, maybe you're right, that changed the story. But that's not what it was. They say the pshat was that the yeshiva, at least the way the yeshiva interpreted, is that this whole story that he has, that he's a night person, he says it's baloney. There's no such thing, a night for what is, because biological clock is different than everyone else in the world. He made up some philosophy that was so stupidity that, you know, if everybody else has a biological clock, then why is your biological clock is set different than everyone else? you know, come on. You know, so, you know, when I go to Israel, all of a sudden my biological clock changes. You adjust your biological clock, so you adjust it. So your clock is set, and for life you can't adjust it, you know. He made up a Bubba Maisa, but he convinced himself of the Bubba Maisa. So now, you know, the Shiva tells him to get up. I don't have to get up. I'm an itis. Rabbi Wein said the exact same thing. He said the exact same story. He said, I heard on tape, that he said there was a guy in yeshiva in Skokie. He was in Skokie, who never came to Minyan. And the Mashkiach called him over and asked him, why don't you come to Minyan? And he said, I can't. It's impossible. So the Mashkiach said, well, he's a little different version. He said, the Mashkiach said, okay, we'll see about that. So the guy told later his friends, years later, the Mashkiach cursed me. Because what happened? I married a girl, and her father is in the fruit business, delivering fresh fruits to the groceries. And you have to be up at like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning to do the business. That's when the business is, because the groceries got to get the fruits in by the they open. And now, so for the last 20 years, every day I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the Mashkiach said, we'll see about that, you know. So we see that I was full of baloney. So he cursed me. Okay, anyway, it's the same idea. But the mindset, so that's reason number two. So reason number one is if you're more motivated, you can do much more. Reason number two is that very often you can do much more even now without being more motivated. It's your atzlis that's convincing you that you can't, because it's a very convenient excuse. Okay. Reason number three is a different story. It's also a true story. There was, when I was in the yeshiva, there was a yeshiva in Pittsburgh. That was I don't remember whose yeshiva it was. It was a branch of some yeshiva, whatever. And B'li Guzma, the last day of the Zman, that yeshiva decided to close. And they offered the yeshiva in Pittsburgh to the Chafetz Chaim. And the yeshiva was very excited. He wanted to open up, have it, start to take over that branch in Pittsburgh. So he quickly got a Rosh Hashira, Rabbi Shmuel Nyman, who was a Rebbe in Chavetz Chaim, was going to go to Pittsburgh to become the yeshiva in Pittsburgh. But they needed some Beis Medrash guys. So the last day of the Zman, you know, whatever it was, you know, Thomas, I guess, they called the meeting in the yeshiva's house of any older guy, you know, post-Blatcher, who could possibly go to Pittsburgh, because he felt they wouldn't be the yeshiva couldn't succeed unless they had some older guys there.
Okay.
And they basically went around the room, and everybody gave a different excuse why they couldn't do it. Can't do it. These guys were going to college, and these guys were dating, whatever. So no one could go. So yeshiva basically twisted a bunch of guys' arms. And okay, you're going out, you'll stop going, you'll take off 2 months from going out, and you'll travel into New York to go out. And then after twisting, he got like 5 guys, whatever, that for 3 months, they can go to Pittsburgh. Okay, so she said, okay, so we're starting the yeshiva. What happened was that, the story of what happened was that Tells called up the yeshiva and said that they would like to take over Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh was near Cleveland and Chicago. I have no idea where Pittsburgh is, but somehow it's near Cleveland and Chicago. So Rashiva said, fine, so you start. And then for some reason, Bob Alton didn't want them, so it never started. But so it never happened. But we were supposed to go to Pittsburgh. So the Rashiva got 5 guys, whatever. I don't remember the exact number. So then Rav Svi Yoelchurk, who's a very gutsy guy, give him credit. So I remember he asked Rashiva. He says, Rabbi, I don't know. He was probably one of the guys having his arm twisted to go, by the way. He says, I don't understand, Rabbi. You say that we can't start the yeshiva unless we have Beis Medrash guys there, post-high, you know. And with twisting arms, we got 5 guys to go. But after 3 months, we're not going anymore. And after 3 months, there's no plan. So you say we can't have the yeshiva without Beis Medrash guys. And we have no Beis Medrash guys after 3 months, so why should we start the yeshiva? Sounds good to me, right? So Rashiva got into one of his, you know, you have to know the Rashiva, like sometimes he got into one of his acting moods. And he gets a whole speech. He says, I have a Messiah from my father. That before you do anything, you have to be Ezer Chacham Arayas HaNeirad, and you think about all the possible problems that can happen, even the far-fetched problems and the more likely problems, and you figure out all the problems. And then before you do it, you solve as many of the problems as you can. And if you're left with some problems you can't solve, then you just forget about them. That was the speech. In other words, what's he saying? He's saying that we really, no one knows the future, right? Rabbi Grunblatt says it differently. How's Rabbi Grunblatt saying? I just recently heard him say it. No, come on, who's our Talmud? Where's our branch guys? Rabbi Grunblatt's favorite, one of his favorite stories, I heard this from him already a few times, that there was a guy that the king sentenced to death. So he told the king, you know, it's Chavat that sent me to death. You know, you love your dog, and I have the ability to teach your dog to speak. Take a little time, but within a 1 year, I can get your dog to speak. You can sentence me to death. I can get your dog to speak. So, okay, you're right. I'll give you a year off. You teach my dog to speak. If you can teach him to speak, I won't even kill you. So his friends go, okay. So his friends go over to him and say, what'd you accomplish? You know, he won't be able to teach the dog to speak. So what'd he say?
A year.
Who knows what's going to be in a year? But a year goes by. The king will die. I don't know. King will change his mind. I don't know. Meanwhile, I got a year. The dog might die. Maybe I'll kill the dog. You know? Whatever it is. You know? So it's the same idea. We don't know. You take the first step. This is the Chofetz Chaim in our Torah. It's a dramatizer. That Bas Paro, she stuck out her hand to reach Mo. You know, there was no way of reaching him. But you have to take the first step. You can stick out your hand, right? You know what I'm talking about. And then Hashem made a nace and it stretched. But there's a person supposed to do the first step. The reason is because we're not so smart to figure out, even though it looks on paper like it can't be done, listen, the first step you can do, you don't know what the second step is. You're not up to the second step. So your first step can be done, so do the first step. I was going to be when I get to the second step. We don't know what's going to be then.
Is Rabbi saying that they're scared for the future, or that they just don't want to take the first step?
No, we don't want to take the first step because in my brain, the second step won't happen. So why start a yeshiva in Pittsburgh when it's going to close in 6 months, or 3 months? So Rashiva said, because who knows what's going to be in 3 months? 3 months, something will happen, which I didn't think about, which will solve this problem. So meanwhile, let's take the step now, and we'll worry about 3 months from now, 3 months from now. So he's saying that very often, if the onus is in the present, that's different. But very often, the onus is in the future. If I do this, it's not going to work out. I'm going to go into our butts and start it, but what am I going to do? How am I going to support myself? How am I going to, whatever. So, listen, I don't know. So take the step, and we'll worry about it later. Then you're in trouble. In other words, he's saying that, but very often it does work out.
So people are scared to take the first step.
People are scared for it because they're convinced that the second step, that they're stuck. There's a blockage in the second step. Why should I go ahead and work on Shir? I can work on Shir. I can get up in the morning and come to Yeshiva for 1 day. But I'm not going to be able to keep it up for a week. So therefore, I'm not going to bother. I won't be able, to keep 3 siddharim. You know, you can't keep 3 siddharim for a week, for 2 months, for a month. Yeah, but I'm not going to be able to go through the whole year. So therefore, you don't try. So the hashkafa is, you do it what you can, and things very often work out that you don't know the future. It's not just a shtadlus, it's common sense that you realize that no one knows the future. We don't know what's going to be in a year from now. If the king's going to die, the dog will die. There's so many things that can happen. So meanwhile, you can still keep on going. So why stop now? You know, it says by the when Christ got to the Yam Suf, So it says, Pasuk says, Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'yisohu. So the Medrash says, why did Hashem say that? I thought Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped in. So why does Hashem have to say, Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'yisohu? So one shot is that he jumped in, and Klai Yisrael jumped in, and they had bitachon that the water would split, and they walked in, and they kept on walking, 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 and the water came up to their, you know, and nothing happened. So what did Hashem say? Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'yisohu. It's only up to their noses. You can still walk underwater a little bit. Keep on going. Then it'll split. You know, when you there's no. As long as you can still do something, don't quit because you can't do it anymore, because you don't know. Anyway, that's the saying.
Is there a difference between something which might looks like it will end up being worse because you won't be able to follow through?
Okay, maybe there's such a thing. Yeah, I hear you. You got to invest money, and then the business is going to fall apart, and then you'll lose all your money. Okay, I'm not saying that, but there's a realization that very, very often things happen that you didn't expect, and it's not because you don't know the future. You can't know. We're not so smart to really know things until we're there. So the Svara is saying is that right now I can do it. What's going to be? So I'm not smart enough to know what will be. So to allow an unknown to stop me from acting now, it's not so smart. If I really feel it's important, so you do it, and you hope that in the future it'll work out somehow. That was a svara. Okay, that's svara number three. And svara number four is Hanukkah. How does it tie into Hanukkah? Because he says, this is what I brought the sefer in, he says that al piderech hateva, there was no way that the Hashmonaim could have beat the Greeks. Right? The Hashmonaim were this few rabbis, and the Greeks were, you know, the strongest army in the world. That's what we say in the Awanisim. And all those things about how they were. And it surely was al piderech hateva, there is no way that they could have found oil to burn in the menorah, because the timnu is kol hashmonim. But because they weren't ready to accept no for an answer, so you get siyata d'shmaya. So you never know. Sometimes Hashem comes through, helps you. What? Okay, maybe. No, you shouldn't stay up all night. Because that's not what you're supposed to do. That's not what you're supposed to do, because it's not what you're supposed to do. As he says here, he never thought what he's supposed to do. You think what you're supposed to do. Halacha doesn't say you're supposed to stay up all night. But anyway, so there are four reasons why saying I can't is not always good. One is because if you'd be more motivated, it's very likely you could. So it's not that you can't, it's that you're not motivated enough. Right? The second reason is, which is the main reason that I wanted, is that very often it's just a baloney excuse. It's not that you can't, it's that you're fooling yourself because you want to appease your conscience. So you go in and you tell yourself you can't when you really could, and the whole thing is baloney. But that's the guy with the couldn't come to Minyan, right? The third reason, that's the main reason that I wanted, really. And I think that's the most inspiring reason for us. The third reason is, I forgot already, we said because we don't really know the future. So even though we might really think we can't, but it could be that when we get closer, there are factors that we're unaware of. We don't know everything in the world. We don't know the future. We don't know, there are so many people tell stories that the yeshiva was on the verge of closing, and then somebody stepped forward and gave the donation and saved the yeshiva.
Rabbi, saying we should depend on those situations?
I didn't think you should depend on it, but maybe it's not a reason. Something is important to be done. It depends on the situation. It's like I told this story that the Rav Kamenovitz said this, that they had to save the Mir Yeshiva. But everyone said it can't be done. They're never going to be, you know. But he said he did it, and, you know, tried, and he ended up. They did it. You know, they had to get millions of dollars to support the yeshiva from Nita to Russia to China to Shanghai and to support it. He said at the end of the day, they were able to do it. So you don't quit. I mean, maybe you shouldn't. Sometimes it's not, you know, maybe you're right. I don't think you should, but you know, people quit. You can't, don't quit. You're still there. You don't know what's going to be. Don't close the yeshiva before you have to close it.
How does this apply to everyday life in yeshiva?
I don't know. Doesn't say about it. And the third, fourth reason, and it depends. You have to know it applies. You have to see. And the fourth reason is that sometimes there's such a thing as hashgacha pratis. You know, you get siyata de shmaya. I once asked a, I asked Rav Levine, you know, when is a Rebbe supposed to learn? He says, you try hard enough, Hashem will make you need less sleep. He said, don't. You know, there's. What?
It's a kasher to
a David. No kasher. I couldn't think of a kasher of David.
The man said with Shiva at his father.
Rav David's story is Pittsburgh. Oh, okay. So we turned to Rav David, so we succeed. Okay, anyway, the main point is really the middle point. That very, very often, I see in the yeshiva very often, that people say, you know, I can't. And we have to realize, now obviously, sometimes you really can't, and you can't, you're supposed to take a break, and you're supposed to, I'm not telling you, but very often, people, use oiness as a excuse. And then they go ahead, and on one hand, you can't, something you have to be careful, you have to worry about your health. Now, Chas Hashem, I'm not saying everyone should go to sleep on time and have to worry about their health and their mental health, and that's not what I'm trying to say. But there are some people that they take it to much, 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 much too far. So you have to know that. Don't be so quick, at least, to say you can't. Now, because we have the four possibilities. Either if you get yourself more motivated, you'll be able to. Maybe it's just your imagination. It's a convenient excuse. And maybe, okay, you should try and you'll see what happens. You'll know the future. And maybe Hashem will come in. Okay, Yeshikaya.
How does a person know what's right?
Ask me. That's not a good answer. But
a lot of times, the reason why you shouldn't.
Okay.
The other reason I shouldn't stay up till